This is The Huddle.
This is not this. This is what we do.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
Presented by DUIHeroes.com.
The Huddle.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. We're getting you guys ready. The Seahawks returning from a bye week, and they're traveling to Lambeau to take on the Green Bay Packers. Packers coming off a loss, but just one of two this season, the first being week one, the last one being without Aaron Rodgers. So this is a tough challenge for the Hawks, Dave, a real tough one.
Yes, it is. And, you know, it's funny, the rivalry, we're going to get into that on Wyman and Bob later, but it's one of the non-division great rivalries. You know, you had Carolina for a while. It seems like Pittsburgh, even though they're AFC and you only play them every four, but you know,
everyone's still mad about Super Bowl 40. I'm not over it.
That's exactly right. Yeah, people still remember Ben Roethlisberger and call him a cheater because
he is a cheater.
The official said he scored. It's not like he said he scored or anything. But anyway, yeah,
we love to hate
Ben Roethlisberger. But you know, you think about these rivalries, it's about the quarterbacks. You know, it's Aaron Rodgers versus Russell Wilson. For a while there, it was Russell Wilson versus Cam Newton in Carolina, and that was a big one. But, yeah, this is very much a home-dominated series because I know that the Packers haven't won out here since October 12th of 2008. And then the last time, and I don't even know the date, I just know it was 1999 was the last time that the Seahawks won in Green Bay. So, yeah, these two teams, and can you imagine if you're Green Bay – having come here, and there was the Golden Tate catch that wasn't. And then in 2000, after the 14 season, so technically 2015, the NFC Championship game. I mean, there were so many ways that they could have won that. So if you're a Packer fan, you probably hate Russell Wilson and this team as much as we all hate, you know, those teams and Ben Roethlisberger and guys like that.
And that's what makes a rivalry so great, right? I mean, you just love those storylines and you love the setup to these games. So this is a tremendous opportunity. And quite frankly, I mean, this game means more to Seattle than it does necessarily to Green Bay in terms of the outlook of the playoffs and everything like that. And I always feel funny saying that because, Dave, as you know, every game matters. Every game is meaningful, and ultimately the Green Bay Packers are not thinking of it that way. But when it comes to Seattle Seahawks, the opportunity to potentially get your entire team healthy from across the board, offensively, defensively, special teams-wise, after the bye and come out with a win would be huge in terms of setting up the outlook for what the second half of this season can hold. And quite frankly, you know, the opportunity of thinking about what this team could do postseason. So that's what this game could mean for the Seattle Seahawks in terms of it being a major launch point for them to have an incredibly fun second half of the season.
What's interesting about the Packers is that they aren't necessarily leading the league in any particular category. For instance, the Dallas Cowboys have really picked things up this year, and for a reason. They're number one in total offense. I think they're number one or two in both passing and rushing. You have the Buffalo Bills defense, which is number one in almost every category. The Cleveland Browns are number one in rushing offense, but Green Bay is kind of sitting either, you know, top five, top 10, or maybe around 20 in pretty much everything, and yet they're 7-2. They've just managed to win, and maybe that's the most important thing. But guys, I'm looking at these stats. They're 22nd in total offense. That's not bad. I mean, Seattle's 29th. They're 18th in the run, 22nd in the pass. That's both really surprising. Total defense, they're actually 5th, so it's interesting to see them be so much better there. They're 6th in points allowed, so they've at least been able to stop teams. The big thing is they've taken advantage of turnovers and have a +6 turnover differential, which is tied for 4th. So they're a team that's just managed to win, and that sounds like such a way to simplify it in a way that seems to erase all the important parts, but maybe it is the most important part. They found a way to win.
Yeah, well, and when you play defense like that and you have those kinds of numbers, you can win with that, especially if you have an Aaron Rodgers or a Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and the other one was, too, they're 6th in sacks. They have 21 sacks, and, you know, they're kind of sneaky good. You look at Devondre Campbell. What a great example of a guy that just is quietly having a really good year. I mean, he's 83 tackles, 2 forced fumbles, a sack, 2 interceptions. I mean, geez, this guy's he's playing his tail off, and their defense is – so, you know, if you can hold a team to around – would you say they were fifth, Stace, in total defense as far as yards go?
Yeah, they're allowing 321.
Yeah, I mean, that's – and, you know, 320 yards is the number that the Seahawks have allowed the last three games, their defense. So those are – you know, you can win.
Yeah.
You can win with that. So, yeah, I mean, and they didn't. The Seahawks didn't. They lost a three-point game. They lost in overtime to Pittsburgh, but they did beat Jacksonville. So that's winning defense right there. And so then on the other side, I mean, you have so many weapons, Aaron Jones and, you know, of course, Devontae Adams. I mean, really good players on the offense. And all that, you know, revolves around Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, it's a unique way of looking at this team in terms of how they've been able to play, because the year prior – they did not have a great defense. They had a struggling defense, and their defensive coordinator ended up getting fired in Mike Pettine, and they were an explosive offense, right? I mean, Aaron Rodgers goes and wins an MVP. The offense really is leading the way for this team, and now they have, in this year, because, Dave, as you point out, and Stacey, as you point out statistically, the defense is really leading the charge in terms of the style in which they can play. So they can play more of a ball control, try to sustain drives, and really try to wear you down from an offensive perspective, knowing that Aaron Rodgers can and Devontae Adams can come up with enough big plays throughout a given game where they can win. So this is a unique challenge for the Seahawks, because I think that when you're talking about all the things that they do and who they are, we still don't fully know, right? I mean, who are these guys? Who are they defensively? Who are they offensively? I mean, Dave, Stacey and I talked about it to start our show. Is this game is going to be extremely revealing. Do you feel that way, Dave?
Yeah, I'm more about the offense. I feel like I know what the defense is about. They're starting to get it fixed. They got their corner situation resolved, I think, pretty well. And then, you know, they're starting to not make the fundamental mistakes. And, you know, we've been hearing a lot from Pete talking about the pass rush coming along. But, yeah, so I feel like they're on kind of a track. But the offense never really got going. And then Russell gets hurt. And then and finally, when Geno has like just an awesome game, I mean, I can't say enough about the throws that he made. Now he's going to go back on the shelf again, you know, and then here comes Russ. And who knows if it's going to be like he's going to have to restart the momentum or whatever. But, yeah, it's been kind of, you know, and I've said I felt like they could have used the preseason. I know that when we talked to Wayne Larrivee, who's the play-by-play guy for the Packers, he said that first game that the Packers had, that he thinks they could have used the preseason too, because they sat all of their starters. So, but yeah, who are they offensively? That's the bigger mystery to me. I feel like we've seen this defense around for a while, but you know, who are they going to, as we like to say, what are you going to lean your hat on, Jake?
Jake is right there. Well, and you guys, shame on me, because I've waited 8 minutes now to introduce the fact that they are getting Russell Wilson back. Russell Wilson expected to be back in this game. And you're right, Dave. It's a bummer for Geno Smith after his best game to now get benched again and return to that backup role. But it does, I think, change our expectations for what this offense can do, because there's also a chance. Now, Pete Carroll sounded less optimistic about this. We'll get some more information today. There's also a chance you can get Chris Carson back. Guys, what are your expectations for this team with those two guys? I want to talk more about that idea that we haven't seen really what the offense can look like.
Well, just you think about what Chris Carson, when he's healthy, and what he brings. You know, the run that he had in Minnesota. You know, the cutback 32-yard run that he had against the Colts. I mean, when he gets going, he can be that guy. You forget that. And look, I think when he's healthy and having one of his best games, he's a top 10 running back in this league. But it just... I don't know. That whole thing kind of bothers me about the neck. And, you know, I'm hoping that he's going to be able to get out there and, you know, just recover from it. There's been lots of, you know, rumors about that. Same thing with Eskridge. I mean, I think they really could have used that kid. That guy plays so fast. So, yeah, I think those are two reasons why we don't really know what this offense is about.
Yeah, the thing that I want to see and what I've been talking about, it really, and it sparks a lot of it in just hearing the defensive players. And I've been talking about it, but the defensive players, Bobby Wagner, Quandre Diggs, talking about Aaron Rodgers and what he does so well. You want to know how you can get Russell Wilson in the flow of this game really quickly and make him a strength and a positive right out of the gate is, one, finding him easy completions. That could be in the naked bootleg game. That could be, you know, underneath passing routes, you know, the underneath aspect of the game. But finding him easy completions, positive completions. But the other aspect of it is, you mentioned Chris Carson. Allow Russell Wilson to be at the line of scrimmage. Allow him to get you in the right positions, whether it's run or pass, knowing that you have a weapon like Chris Carson back there that you can turn to if the defense dictates that coverage to you. So I think that that's a great way to get him back into the flow of the game and allow this offense to be as successful as possible.
All right, we are going to hear from Russell Wilson in his first press conference, his return to the game. That's coming up at 12:45. First, though, guys, back-to-back player interviews with Al Woods and Freddie Swain. That's up next.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. We're getting you guys ready with a two-hour preview of the Seahawks' upcoming game against the Packers. Coming out of a bye week, fresh legs, fresh perspective, got to review that tape. And one thing, Jake and Dave, that Pete Carroll said they really looked at was third down. Now, the question that he got about it in a press conference was about offensively on third down, though I am sure they looked at both offense and defense. So let's start defensively, where they've been fourth in the league over the last 3 weeks on third down, holding teams to 29% there, which, look, I think that the improvement that you can see is somewhere in between the benefit of playing bad offenses and actual improvement. Like, I think there's something to be said for both.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I always say good defense is good defense against anyone, whether it's the Jags or whatever. I mean, they're all good, okay? They all can win a game and on any Sunday. So, but yeah, I mean, you know, the other thing is, and I know it gets tiresome hearing this, but, like, you know, third down often is a product of what happens on first and second. And one of the things that really, and Jake, you know this better than anybody, I mean, everybody always says, well, a hurry is as good as a sack. I'm like, no, a sack is really
It's a good thing.
It's like saying smelling brownies is kind of like eating brownies.
Yeah.
It's not. It just makes me want a brownie more.
That's a good point. Well, I mean, on first down, second down, all of a sudden you go from it possibly being a very manageable third and two or three, you get sacked, and now it's like a third and 11, third and 12. There's only so many things you can do. So, you know, that I looked at the sack thing a few years ago. And in 2019, remember, they were terrible. They had the second least sacks in the NFL. I think it was Miami had like 26 or 27. They had 28, I think. But if you looked at the drives on those sacks where they had them, there was never a touchdown scored. In a series where they had a sack, there were no touchdowns. And then, you know, I can't remember, it was like five or six field goals. There was a couple missed field goals. I mean, it was all good. I mean, if you're a defensive player, it was all good stuff. No touchdowns, holding people to field goals. So yeah, it's a huge play. So that, you know, that will help them. And I think Pete has been talking about the pass rush coming along, getting a little bit better. And I think that also, Jake, is because the coverage has gotten better and a lot of improvement at corner, especially.
Yeah, it is a factor. And in that conversation, just real quick, as you're talking about hurries and pressures and sacks, we know, is the ultimate prize. The reason why hurries and pressures can sometimes be a misleading stat, although it's good, they don't always quantify as the same thing. And every quarterback reacts differently to hurries and pressures. The great quarterbacks, hurries and pressures, that's just football. They know how to deal with it. They can get rid of the football. And even when they get hit, they're able to still be effective quarterbacks. And so when you face some of the lesser quarterbacks, sometimes you can get in their head, you could rattle them a little bit. But overall, the best thing is sacks. But you're right, Dave, when it comes to this defense getting better in that regard towards sacks, the back end being able to sustain coverage and actually make quarterbacks have to hold on to the football. And the thing that I saw, and yes, it's a rookie quarterback with Trevor Lawrence, but because there's actual defenders around the targeted receiver, you're seeing a quarterback have to not only find the open guy, but then once they find the open guy, how do I place this football? How do I fit it in there? Do I have to put it on his back hip? Can I lead him? There's that quick other second thought process in terms of how you're throwing that football, which leads to errant throws. And that, to me, is the thing that the Seahawks have not been able to do effectively to begin the year that they started to tighten up over the last couple weeks.
Well, and then, you know, here's the thing about the sacks as far as team goes. They have more than Kansas City, and they have more than Atlanta.
And that's it.
That is the end. Yeah, so, I mean, you look at the teams that have more than them. I mean, Detroit, Jacksonville, Miami, Houston. So, yeah, they're pretty far down on the list. And I don't know if you guys think it is more about coverage or just different this year.
Sometimes it's about heating up at the right time, too. Like, Jacksonville, when they entered that game against Jacksonville, had 8 sacks. So, in the game that Jacksonville played against Seattle and then the subsequent game they had against Buffalo, they're now up to, what, 15? So, you have to think, in 2 weeks, they almost doubled their sack total for the year. So, Jacksonville just managed to get hot over the last two weeks and turn that around. So, you can turn it around at any point. Same with New Orleans, that had 8 sacks heading into that game against Seattle and then had 4, I think, of Geno Smith on the day, 4 or 5. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what needs to happen. And it's weird because they're heading into the season with a lot of the same defensive personnel. We're going to be joined by Al Woods here, speaking of, in just a couple seconds. But so curious to ask him, too, about the pass rush and just about facing Aaron Rodgers, right? Like, how do you prepare to face a guy like that? That might be my first question for Al Woods, who joins us right now. Hey, Al, how are you?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well, thank you. We're just previewing this upcoming game against the Packers, and man, I don't know if you have an easy answer for this one, but how do you prepare to face Aaron Rodgers?
Study, and more study.
Makes sense.
And then go out there and give it your best, and I'm pretty sure he's going to have something up his sleeve.
Yeah.
Well, and Al, it seems like, you know, he's not necessarily like a scrambling quarterback, but he is a guy that, it comes off as he knows exactly where to move. He's really good at just kind of shifting around in the pocket. Is that his strength? Is that how he's so elusive?
I would say, you know, I mean, let's just be honest. The dude's going to have a gold jacket when he decides to retire. But, I mean, it's like watching a master at work, you know. So to be the master, you have to study one and study his movement, study what he's going to do. But definitely, you know, he's a guy that he can get out and make things happen with his legs. He's deceptively fast. People think he's slow, but he's really not. So just go out there and just muddy it up for him, keep everything in front of him, and let's see what happens.
Well, Al, you know, one of the other aspects, the way that you guys can muddy things up is, you know, one of the things that people overlook is the fact that the Green Bay Packers do have a pretty effective run game with Aaron Jones, with A.J. Dillon. I mean, these guys are pretty darn good backs. They do rely on their running game. So, Al, what have you seen from them in that offensive line, and what kind of challenge is that going to be for you guys?
They got a great 1-2 punch with their backs. Both hit it downhill, not messing around. Offensive line are good. They do a good job of working together as a unit, making sure everybody's in the right spot, doing the right thing. So it's definitely going to be a challenge, but, hey, man, it's a challenge that we happily accept, and we're going to test that challenge on Sunday.
Hey, Al, when you go into a game, tell me about weather. For me, it was always heat. I hated heat because you just can't get cooler. You can always get warmer. But I don't think it's going to be a factor this week. But as far what's your least favorite weather phenomenon on game day?
I don't know. I'm kind of – I don't really have one.
Do you handle the heat okay, though?
Yeah, I'm from the South.
Yeah.
I'm from Louisiana, so I've been in the heat all of my life, and then I made a bunch of my career up in, you know, Pittsburgh, so that was dealing with cold. A couple of times here in Seattle, you know, Indianapolis, Tennessee, that's all cooler states that I'm used to being in. So, you know, for majority of my career, I've been up there in those states. I can adjust to the cold quite well easily.
Al, I've always been curious, from an offense defensive line perspective, you guys are going at it all game long. How chippy does it get? I mean, are you guys just, you know, bunch of big dudes that are going at it, let the play do the talking, and trying to catch your breath the next play to get it going all over again? Or is there a lot of talking that goes on in between each play?
Every now and then you have some talking, just when you know, the battle is getting really, really hot and the games are getting close. And, you know, you've been in an even battle. People may say something just to throw you off your game a second. But me personally, I don't talk. I don't say a word to nobody. I just do my job. I don't have time. I got too much stuff to get done in between the snaps. So I don't say a word. I just may look at you like, I'm a hurt you on this next play, but other than that, I ain't saying nothing.
I feel like that's almost scarier, right? Like if I was an offensive player and I was like, "Hey man," and someone looked at me and said nothing, I'd be like, "That guy's gonna kill me."
Yeah, I mean that's exactly what I do. People say stuff to me all the time, and I just may walk past. I won't even open
perfect.
My mouth.
Al, that is perfect.
Al, is there any time you don't have to name a specific player or whatever, but has there ever been a time where you've heard some trash talk where you're like, you know what, I got to give you props on that one. That was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, one time they actually made me laugh on the field. One guy told me I had pretty eyes, and he just kind of told me off. I was like, all right, listen, we playing ball. Like, leave that alone, bro.
No, man, I think that was an effort for
that
sure. That was smart
one.
Trash talk. All right, he is defensive lineman for the Seattle Seahawks, Al Woods. Al, it's been a pleasure. This has been fun, man. We hope we can talk to you again this season.
Yep, y'all have a good one.
You too.
Thanks, Al.
Told him he has pretty eyes.
I kind of like
really
abstract trash talk. Like, I like the idea of a player being like, "Hey, I like your shirt," and the player's just like, "What?"
Do we have a second, or do we need to go to break?
We'll head to break. We'll come back here in just a minute with
just
Freddie's
one way. Little trash talking story.
I can't wait. This is coming up next on The Huddle.
This is The Huddle, every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Single rep and some more.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. Talking to some players today and joined now by wide receiver Freddie Swain. Hey, Freddie, how are you?
Yes, I said I'm good. How you doing?
Oh, there we go. All right. Well, we're really excited to talk to you. We've got, I think, a lot of expectations for this offense in the second half of the year. You guys have been powering through. I know it hasn't been the year you've wanted, but you've also been dealing with some guys missing and some guys injured. So what are your own personal expectations for the offense, starting with Green Bay, but let's talk second half too.
Well, I think we just got to play a clean game all the way through with everybody, every position. I think we just play a clean game and everybody executes. I think we'll come up like we should.
Yeah. Hey, Freddie, tell us about that room now. You know, and I'm not sure how much you look at the news and stuff like that, Odell Beckham Jr. out there, but it seems like you guys have a really good chemistry there. It seems like everybody cares about each other and supports one another. Tell us about the culture in that receiver room.
Yeah, I think it all starts with respect. Everybody respects each other. Everybody knows what everybody brings to the table. So I think we just push guys to a limit to whether whoever's in the game, there's no drop-off to whoever's in the game. So I think we just hold everybody to the same standard, and we just have fun.
You know, Freddie, one of the things that has been really fun to watch this season is just the ability to use you in a variety of different ways, whether that is in the fly sweep game or seeing more contribution in the passing game and you know, having a focus to get you the football. What has that role been like for you thus far as the season has evolved, especially with, you know, D being out and you getting more opportunities?
Yeah, I just come to work. I show that I can be trusted. I run block, I pass block, I catch the ball, kind of do it all. So it's kind of fun to have a role like that in an offense like this.
Hey, Freddie, we haven't seen him yet, but how's Russell Wilson looking at practice?
Great. Like nothing ever happened.
So you can't tell anything. There's no...
No, that was a good answer.
Speed off the fastball or anything like that?
Nope, nothing.
There we go. Okay, we're going top secret. He doesn't want to reveal anything.
Yeah.
I get it.
Freddie, you know, one of the other things is, you know, people on the outside look at Russell Wilson, his pregame routine. I know that a lot of people also don't know that, like, he's been doing that at practice when he was out as well, off to the side. You know, he was doing that while you guys were practicing and everything as well. What was your guys' conversation about that amongst yourselves when you're seeing Russell, you know, off to the side doing his thing or going through the pregame routine? A lot of people, you know, giving him flack or talking about his preparation. What does it say to you guys, though?
You can just tell how much he wants it, how much he's locked in and he's focused. You know, to be out with an injury and he's still over there like managing, like you have a whole offense around you, and you driving the ball up and down by yourself. It shows your character as a human, as a player, as a man, and it shows guys that you're bought in.
Hey, Freddie, I'm curious. I asked about kind of, you know, the plan for the whole offense and the playbook and all of that stuff. But what are your own personal goals for this season?
Just to keep contributing in any type of way, whether it be special teams, offense, just keep contributing and being a factor.
Hey, Freddie, for you, you're a guy from Florida, so you pretty much looks like grew up in Florida. And I know the weather's supposed to be, you know, okay, you know, a little bit cold. But is there anything that what's your least favorite as far as weather? For a receiver, it's got to be what, rain, wind? What about snow?
It depends on the rain. Florida rain's different than Seattle's rain. So
yeah it is.
I would say Florida's rain is probably the most difficult to play in.
I'm with you, Freddie. I was there at Miami for 6 months for my final year, and I couldn't believe it. It rains a lot here, but I was walking to camp through campus. All of a sudden, it starts to rain. I thought to myself, no big deal. And immediately, I had to go underneath some shelter because I was drenched like I just got in the pool.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, it rains pretty good down there.
Yeah, it really does. Now, you know, Freddie, one of the things that, you know, I've really been looking at has been the idea of the offense, the identity. What has this offense really tried to establish themselves to be? What do you guys feel like you guys should be offensively?
I think we're a balanced team. We can run it. We can pass it. So I think if we just come out hitting on all cylinders, like I said, and we just execute the plays that are called, I think we'll be a well offense and a top offense in the NFL.
Can I get back to that last question we were talking about? What's like the most physically uncomfortable you've ever been in a game weather-wise, where it was either way too hot, way too cold, stormy, windy, I don't know what was happening, where you thought, man, I'm not confident I'm making it through this one?
In the NFL or just
anytime? Anytime,
oh,
where it sticks with you. You know when you have moments that stick with you and you can remember how you felt? That kind of game.
No, in Florida, it gets pretty hot. So there's been a couple of times in a couple of games that it's been scorching hot and you don't know how you're going to get through it. So.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So Freddie, is it kind of cool going into, is Green Bay one of those trips that you kind of check off your list that, you know, it's got a lot of history?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're excited for this trip then?
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. Freddie, I was talking to Al about this, and, you know, interior linemen are a little bit different. You know, there might not be as much trash talking, but how much trash talking has there been in your experience out on the edge between you and the corners? And has there been anybody that's actually gotten you and you've been like, you know what, that's actually pretty good?
No, I don't feed into that. I'm there to play a game. I don't feed into the trash talk. I mean, it's cool and it's fun, but it's a penalty now, so I don't really feed into it no more. And they fine you for it, so I try to keep my money in my pocket. I have a
dog now. It's a good way to approach
wise,
it. He
wise.
Is Seahawks wide yes. receiver Freddie Swain. Freddie, have a good game this weekend. Good luck, and it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Yeah. All
See
right.
You,
you are listening to The Huddle. We have 1 minute left, Dave. I got to hear this
All
trash talking
right.
story.
Really quick, Joe Kane. We were down, it was a TV timeout down in L.A. playing the Raiders, and it was back in the 90s where those Malcolm X shirts were really in with the big X.
Uh-huh.
And so Joe told one of their offense, both sides of the ball were cracking up.
Oh, God.
That was a good one.
That was a good one. I liked that one. I don't know if it's better than someone telling Al Woods, you have beautiful eyes, because I love just awkwardness.
That's very awkward.
That one's
that
very
one.
That one's very kind of like I like an idea of a trash talk where the person who is being trash talked to, the recipient, has no idea what to say.
Well, and the thing is it's like the last thing you would expect on the field.
It is.
Right?
It is.
All right.
You have beautiful
that'll
eyes.
Give you that'll give you a double take, that's for sure.
All right. Russell Wilson speaking with reporters next, and we got Ray Roberts and Steve Rabel coming up in hour two. This is The Huddle.
Welcome back to The Huddle. Dave Wyman, Stacey Ross, Jake Heaps, C. Raj on the board. Let's go to the Russell Wilson press conference.
Now being out there, what's a recruiting pitch look like to get him to come to Seattle?
Well, I think first of all, with Odell, obviously he's an unbelievable talent. You know, one of world-class generational type talents. You know, I think that, you know, for our organization, you know, we're always trying to find ways to compete and trying to find ways to win, that kind of thing. But we got some great guys already too, and we got some of the best guys in the world already. So just to have the possibility of adding another amazing talent would be amazing. If not, we're still ready. We're still ready to go. Hopefully all the way, and that's kind of our focus. But he's tremendous talent.
You know him a little bit?
Yeah, I've gotten to know Odell over the years. I mean, he's always worked extremely hard. We've thrown in the summer times, you know, and all that kind of stuff in California and stuff, and you know, have a good rapport with one another and stuff like that. So got a lot of respect for how he plays the game and all that.
But have you talked to him since he became a free agent?
Yeah, we've talked. You know, we talked throughout the years, really, to be honest with you, just about life and whatever, you know, and just been good friends and stuff like that. And like I said, we've thrown a bunch together, you know, so I know him pretty well.
What have these last few weeks been like for you? I mean, you never missed a game, hardly any practice, anything for 10 seasons. And yeah. Then to be out this long, how was that for you?
You know, it was definitely a challenge. You know, I think adversity brings the best out of you, you know, and I think that, you know, for me, I definitely went through some adverse times with the hand and everything else. And, you know, difficult moment, but at the same time, you know, I also know that, you know, I always lean on the scripture, consider it pure joy. James 1:2 says, consider it pure joy and go through trials and tribulations because of the testing of your faith that builds perseverance. A few things that my parents and I taught me is, you know, knowing how to persevere, knowing how to get through adversity. And I think that, first of all, the first thing is, you know, non-negativity, just trying to be completely neutral in the midst of it all, knowing that things happen. You know, I'm also knowing that, man, I've been blessed to be able to play all the games I've been able to play and, you know, and all the things I've been able to do so far in this league. And I think that, you know, I feel like it's a new beginning. I feel like it's a new start. And I feel like it's time to get going again, all over again. So I think that all the hard work, all the attention to detail has been amazing. I think also, too, I think to be surrounded around some of the best people in the world, you know, daily, obviously this organization and people around here, and also too, just kind of my performance team. I mean, just to have Amy, my PT, with the amount of time. I mean, we literally probably 20 hours a day, 19 hours a day, you know, we're working on this hand, just trying to break records with this thing, because, you know, it was a pretty severe injury, you know, in the sense of how many things happened, you know. So I think that for me, my whole mindset was to cut the time in half, you know, and that's kind of what my mindset has been since the moment it happened. And you know, I think that, you know, to have amazing people like Amy to be there every day, every pretty much every second of the day, to also have you know, some amazing people too, you know, this lady named Moe's awesome, OT hand specialist, has been awesome. You know, to be obviously Dr. Shin's best in the world at hands, and to be able to work with him. You know, and I think for me, I never lost confidence in where I was going to go, what I was going to do, and how I was going to get it done. You know, and so I think that, you know, throughout the whole process, I knew, you know, I was hoping, I kind of knew in my head, you know, this is my goal, this is where I want to be, this and that. Just keeping my head in it, you know, every day of practice, you know, I mean, every day of practice, I got every single rep and some more, you know, just by staying on the side and just trying to mentally go through everything. I think, obviously, you guys saw the games, me mentally being in it too as well, but I think you got to have vision. You got to have the ability to play the game in your head. You got to have the ability to stand tall when it's tough, and also too, you know, to be around great teammates. It's been an amazing journey. And so, really, you know, the bye week was just God's perfect timing, just for me to be able to simply just kind of go into a shell and just, you know, I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to get the pen out quite yet, but, you know, just had to get confirmation. And so Dr. Shin said I could, once he saw my hand again, and everything was going at an exponential rate because of all the treatment and other things we were doing. And so, you know, all the innovative thoughts of and everything else. And so, you know, when I was able to get the pen out, you know, I really wasn't supposed to throw for a little bit longer, but, you know, I was with my performance team, Tim Grover, and, you know, Amy was down there, Mo, just different people, and Coach OB, Decker, Andressa, and then and Coach Bible was actually there with me too, and so we kind of, Tim tossed me the ball, and I kind of tossed it back to him. He said, "All right, you can do it." So then I kind of looked at the ball again, you know, me. And so I just picked up the ball the next day. And just, you know, that day, it was probably 12, 16 hours after the pin, somewhere around there, maybe less, and just started trying to throw. And I had a plan in my head, and I even beat my own plan just by having amazing people around. So I'm grateful to God that I'm able to do what I get to do every day, but also to know that, I could do it with the passion and the joy. And the thing I think about it all, too, as well is, you know, I've always loved this game, and to be able to find that much more love for it every day, because you can take your time. You can, and for me, there is no other option, And so we have a goal. We have a goal to win. We have a goal to win it all. And everything we want to do is right there in front of us. We got to take it one step at a time. I think that the thing in rehab, just in general, in the process, has been that, you just take the next step. You just take the next step, the next breath. And so that's been a cool journey.
That was Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson speaking to reporters. Some breaking news here on the Odell Beckham Jr. front. Now, I want to preface that there are conflicting reports, so I'll tell you what both reports are. ESPN insider Adam Schefter says that Odell Beckham Jr. is expected to sign with the LA Rams, a team that was recently in on Odell Beckham Jr. Now may have claimed him. Signed him, not claimed him. Meanwhile, Kim Jones and Ian Rappaport, NFL Media, NFL Network, say that Odell Beckham Jr. is still narrowing down his choices, and right now he's focused on the Rams and the Packers. So it sounds like at least one report, Rappaport, is that he is between the Rams and the Packers, but still unsigned. Jacina Anderson echoing that he is still on the fence. Meanwhile, Adam Schefter saying he is expected to sign with the Rams.
With Schefter. I'm going to go with Schefter.
Yeah.
Because he used to write for the Rocky Mountain News when I was in Denver, and he's an acquaintance of mine. I wouldn't say we're friends, but
I think you should claim it.
He also has like 12 phones. So, yeah, I don't know. I just get that feeling. But if he is, Jake, I mean, don't they have enough weapons down there already?
Well, Sean McVay doesn't think so. I mean, they feel like they can add another weapon and a third target to Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp and feel like they can be even more dynamic for Matthew Stafford. I mean, either way, I mean, the conflicting reports, whether he goes to Green Bay, whether he goes to Rams, I mean, these are two very high-powered offenses that they will be adding another very talented football player to their roster, and it just stinks to see OBJ go to a division rival or within the NFC in general. But if he's going to the Rams, I mean, part of it is the unique aspect of OBJ wanting, saying that he wanted to go to Seattle, that Seattle was his favorite team over the weekend. And I think from an initial standpoint, thinking of playing with Russell Wilson, going to Seattle, playing for Pete Carroll, all those things are attractive. But when you talk about where the current status of the team is and also where the offense is as well, I also don't blame Odell Beckham Jr. for thinking twice about that decision and trying to figure out where is the best scheme fit for him to be able to be successful in these 8-9 games, where it's going to be vital for him to not just be a part of a winning team and a known program, but more importantly, to produce so that when you hit free agency, you can earn another big contract.
All right. If you are just now joining us, first of all, you're listening to The Huddle. And secondly, there is breaking news regarding Odell Beckham Jr., conflicting reports from ESPN and NFL Network. ESPN's Adam Schefter saying Odell Beckham Jr. expected to be an LA Ram. NFL Network's Ian Rappaport saying he is still on the fence, currently choosing between similar offers from the Packers and Rams. We'll continuing following this story, but mostly previewing the Seahawks' upcoming game against the Packers at Lambeau Field. We're going in the trenches with Ray Roberts next.